that I did involve from the did involve in this civil society's activities. My own experience is I was put in jail 2 times on the political reason, not political but sometimes ideological reason, like in Khmer Rouge time. I was put in jail because I was living in Phnom Penh in the city, and I have to be brainwashed before I can enter in the new society. Something I didn't do any harmful or illegal act at all. And the second time too, I was put in jail in 1990 for 17 months because I just only get some paper document on from the one group who would like to set up a new political party, and I was put in the bad condition in that period of time. Reason why I had the idea to set up this human rights organization from that place. And after the prison, I started to set up this human rights organization, and I did involve and commit the work from on this organization from that period of time in 1992, something like this, until now.
So Mr. Thun Sirai, the president of Cambodian Human Rights and Development Association, thank you for talking with me today. I just wanted to go into a little bit more detail about your past, your background, as it were. So were you educated and brought up in Cambodia?
I was a student at the Faculty of Law in Phnom Penh, but on the Economic Science section. I did work around 10 months in the Finance Ministry before the Khmer Rouge took power. And later on, after the Khmer Rouge took power, I became, like I said to you, put in the re-education center for 10 months, and later on I became like the farmers, forced labor by the Khmer Rouge regime. And after the Khmer Rouge collapse, I start to work in the Sociology Institute in Phnom Penh until I was put in jail again in 1990. From 1992, that means at the end of 1991, I set up this human rights organization. In 1992, I start to implement the activity of this organization until today. That is my background.
Thank you. And so did you establish the Sociology Institute?
No, I just only one founder with my director in 1980. And I did publicize some book at that time, like the Khmer money history, Cambodian bank note or coin of the Khmer history, something like this. The last publication that I did before I was put in jail is the review in Khmer on the economy.
And what kinds of activities has your NGO been involved in since 1992?
Since 1992, we start to educate the human rights principle, democratic principle, to the public in general. And later on, after 1992, we train the police officer, the government official, on human rights and democratic principle. Until 2003, something like this, that we, 2004, we switched from training to the police, armed force, government official, to the people at the grassroots level on human rights. And with this education activity, we also provide legal assistance, legal advice to the victim of all kind of human rights violation, from political killing, extrajudicial killing, physical assault, intimidation, political intimidation, threat, and also the gender-based violence victim also, like victim of rape, domestic violence, trafficking, something like this, that we did provide, we has been, we has done a lot of this kind of activity to provide assistance to the victim. Each year now we receive around more than 1,000 complaints of all kinds, land conflict, political case, and gender-based violence case. And also we provide some legal advice on the case that not fitting to our mandate. We did receive also, we do receive also each year around 1,000 cases also, more than 1,000 cases also. But we don't provide any legal assistance or legal investigation or intervention at all, but just only provide legal advice for those cases not fitting to our mandate. But the case fitting to our mandate, around more than 1,000 cases also, but we provide we try to do the investigation, collect all information, and we do some intervention to the relevant authority and legal assistance to the victim if they need our lawyer to provide assistance to them, to the court.
And for this, obviously, you have to work through the legal system in Cambodia. And have you found that to be developed enough? Has it, as an institution, has it grown over the last few years in a way that helps you protect the human rights of ordinary citizens?
Yes, we try to provide a capacity building to our staff. We try to organize sharing of experience, sharing of knowledge regularly from 1 year to another year. Every month we have the meeting here with all the staff. Coordinator of our organization from the province. We have the branches all over the country now. We try to meet once a month, and also we organize many training to improve their capacity, and also we provide also some scholarship for our staff to build their capacity in the long run also, like master degree or bachelor degree who don't have a bachelor degree. We provide them also some scholarship to follow their study until bachelor degree or master degree, something like this. And we did a lot of effort in order to improve the capacity of our staff. Yeah.
And legal and judicial reform is one of the things that the government has focused on to some extent. They've set up a council on these matters.
Mm.
Do you think the government has been successful in developing the legal system and the judicial system in a satisfactory manner?
Mm. I would like to separate two things, legal and judicial.
Sure.
On the legal aspect, we see that many law, dozen and hundred law has been passed in the last 15 year or 16 year. That is great. Some law also try to implement the human rights principle, because in our 1993 constitution, we have enough provision on the human rights. Reason why some law try to improve the implementation of human rights principle in our society, like domestic violence law, that is a new law that didn't happen in the past. And at least I think that is a progressive law to change our society. But we still have the problem of implementation. That is the big challenge for our society until today. We have enough law, good law, like the land law. We have also the good provision, not the perfect one, but only way we can say that the good law. But the problem, we still have the gap between the provision in the law and the practice in the implementation level. The reason why I would like to talk about the judicial system here. You see, with the small salary of the judge, the prosecutor, and the police, judicial police, we see a lot of problem happen in that aspect of judiciary. A lot of capacity building made by the different actors, donors, community, and also our government side. Civil society organization also, they provide also the capacity building also through the workshops, through the seminar organized by them with the judiciary people, like the court, like the judges, prosecutor, and the clerk of the country. But the capacity building is not enough. With this small salary, we see a lot of problem of corruption inside the court system. Many people see, not trust to the court. They see the court as the instrument used by the powerful and the rich against the powerless and the poor people. And the poor people, they don't trust too much to the court. In general, the public here, they don't trust to the court. Because all the time, most of the time we see that the rich and the powerful rarely punish, rarely receive the judgment in the favor of the poor, in favor of the powerless people. That is the observation in general. And also the court is still receive a lot of political influence. Reason why we as civil society and also the international community also would like to do the reform of the legal and judicial, especially the judicial reform. Legal, I think a lot of progress, we can say like this, assisted by the donor community and also by NGO. But the judiciary is, according to my opinion, there are some progress on the capacity building, but not on the providing the justice to the people.
And then what kinds of efforts have NGOs and the international donors made in the area of judicial reform?
We ad hoc and other organization, from 1999, we produced one report on impunity with in collaboration with Human Rights Watch, to sensitize the public about this issue. And we start to lobby from that report to the donor community in the CG meeting. CG meeting, that means the consultative group meeting, that means the donors and the government meeting. Each year they meet together to assess the implementation of the economic assistance to the government. 3 or 4 years later, we see some promise from the government side, but just only the promise. I remember well, 2003 something, our head of the government pledged to the CG meeting that the government of Cambodia will amend. The important law is the Supreme Council of Magistracy Law in order to make the reform of the judiciary. But until that promise, that day, no progress at all on this law. Now around 5 or 6 years, we didn't see any progress. Nobody touch this law yet. And for us as civil society, we think this law is the key law for the reform of this judiciary. But no progress at all. That is my opinion about judicial reform. And some donors community, like multilateral donors, one multilateral donor I don't like to name, one of the representatives of that multi-donor agency, they also don't hope to have this kind of reform, because they said that no political will yet. Sorry. Hello? Sorry. I have to switch off.
Please continue. You were talking about one of the representatives of the donor organization.
Yeah. She said to me that she don't optimistic because she didn't see any political will from the government to do this reform seriously. The reason why this agency dropped down their program on this judicial reform. And for us too, because it's hard to say, but in order to make this reform, we need to have the will of the leader, political will from the leader. But the leader of this country, I according to my opinion, they are not ready to do the reform, because they still need to protect their people in the power. And if we put this judiciary be independent from them, and they cannot control the judiciary, this judiciary can punish many people of them. That's the problem. They need to protect their people.
Do you think that there is any kind of thinking in the government about the economic logic of having an independent judiciary, that if the legal system of a country is more predictable and more objective, then more companies will invest in Cambodia? Has that kind of thinking taken place in the government?
Yeah, that is the reason why we still have a lot of mistrust from the investor to come to Cambodia, because of the concern about the weakness of this judiciary. The reason why some investors, they prefer to go to the neighbor country court if they have the conflict inside Cambodia. Yeah, because they don't trust too much on this judiciary. But now, I think the government, they have to be aware about this. They need to attract the investment to Cambodia, but they have to reform this judiciary. But they like I said to you, that they still need to protect their people. They still don't like to see this judiciary escape from their control, you see? Because if this judiciary escape from their control, the regime could have a problem also. I don't like to elaborate more, but...
Sure. Do you see any kind of situation in the future when this might change, when there might be a space for judicial reform to actually take place?
For me, I think we need to make some pressure from the WTO regulation, because WTO requirement of the member state is to transform this judiciary to be acceptable, no? I cannot say the independent one, but acceptable by the investor. And also the awareness from the donor community to this government about they are willing to attract the investment for the economic development of this country. They need the investment, but if they don't prepare the ground in favorable condition for them, how they can come? For example, recent statement by the Cambodian government, they mentioned that Japan is the biggest bilateral donors to Cambodia. But in the contrary, the Japanese investor to come to Cambodia is very small number, very few. They are aware about this, you see, and they make the appeal to the Japanese investor to come, but appeal is nonsense if they don't prepare the ground for them to come. You see, that is the awareness rising that should be done to this Cambodian government. Not they have to be aware about this. Why they don't come? And also we, as a society, we try to sensitize them about the if we have the widespread of injustice, because we would like to have the social stability. But if one society have the sustainable stability, in what condition? If we try to widespread this kind of injustice to so many people like this, how we can have the social stability? Cannot. That stability is just only the a symbolic one, or show up, not a concrete social stability at all. And we try to sensitize the leader of the country or the government official about this, that stability is not based on the political stability as such. It's based on the social stability with the equity, with the justice. And we always say that peace without stability, without justice, stability without justice is not sustainable. And it could collapse one day. That's our message to the government people about this. And they have to be aware about this. And we have to continue the WTO requirement. The donors sensitize community have to sensitize the government people, investor, foreign investor also to have to explain to our government that why we don't come to your country, because that, you see, because of this weakness of judiciary, and also we civil society also have to sensitize them about this. I think the different actor, different partner of this development process of Cambodia could also bring some contribution on that.
Mm-hmm. So going back now to your role as an academic in Cambodia, you've been here since the early 1980s, working in various organizations. You mentioned the Sociology Institute, where you were in the 80s. And I wonder, as an observer of the government, if you can talk a little bit about how the priorities of the government have changed over the last three decades. If we start with the 1980s, what was the priority of the government then with regard to institutional development of Cambodia?
I said many times in our radio program, talk show. We have to wait to make our society viable, sustain, not collapse all the time. One is we based on the one group of people who get the support from the people. That means like the monarchy or the group of the leader. But to maintain this kind of stability of the country, we should not base on the people, the group of the people like this anymore. In the past, we based on the one leader or the group of leader that they govern the country. But for us, we need to strengthen the institution, the state institution, from now on. Because in the past, we have many collapse of the change of the regime from one to another. Just only 20 years, we changed the regime 5 times. Because we our country based on the group of the old people, you see, the charismatic leader or the small group of people. When and a group of people or the people, one leader, they cannot stay all the time in the power, you see. The reason why we need to strengthen this state institution, especially the democratic institution, in order to put our society not to depend on the one leader or the one group of leader anymore. Like in the mature democratic country, they don't have the government 6 months or 1 year, but their society is still going on with the stability. But here, without one leader or one group of leader, our society collapse. A lot of turmoil. The reason why, in order to stabilize, our society, we need also to strengthen the institution like separation of power, like judiciary should be trusted by the people. Public administration should be neutral to serve the people in general, not to serve just only the group of the people. That is very important. The military, the armed force should be independent. According to my observation from the past until today, we don't have the national army. We don't have the national police. The army is the army of the general or one general or one group of general. It's not the army for the whole nation. That is and also the administration too. The administration of like the Khmer Rouge time is the administration for the Khmer Rouge people, but the remaining people, the rest of the people, they are fearful, yeah, with this administration, because we are not protected by that administration or served by the provided service by them to us. And then during the different communist or authoritarian regime successive, we saw also that kind of thing happen. And now we have a lot of, yeah, we can say that a lot of change, but still far away to go. Because that kind of consequence from the past, our civil administration still not really independent from the ruling party, still controlled strongly by the ruling party. That we worry a lot. Yeah, they try to show up that they sell not only the supporter of the ruling party, but they serve also the rest of the people too. But the people still, a lot of people still feel discriminated by that administration at the local level, at the provincial level. They still feel like that. According to my knowledge, perhaps I could be wrong, but I still see like this. And the problem of now with the armed force, we see that the problem of also corruption too. The armed force used by the private company to shoot down the protester against the land economic concession company, something like this. I think in the major democratic society, the armed force is to serve the nation, to defend the sovereignty, integrity of the territory, integrity of the country. It's not to serve, to protect the private land economic concession of the private company like this. And the police officer or the gendarmerie or the armed force should not be used by some powerful people or rich people to crack down the protest, peaceful protest organized by the poor people, the public people like this. I still see that kind of thing happening from time to time. And I disappointed when I saw the armed force used by some powerful people again, the powerless, the poor people like this, crack down the peaceful demonstration, and they do not sing any violent act, but they crack down severely again that kind of protester, peaceful protester like this. That is my opinion, that they should strengthen the public administration, the armed force, to become, to serve the national interest, and the court also should be reformed in order to get the confidence, the trust from the people in general, not to serve only the interest of the rich or the powerful people. That is my opinion.
You talked about the desire in the government for peace and stability, and you said that it should not just be political. And in the 1990s, that was a major argument that the government made, that we are doing this for peace and stability. A lot of the things that, policies that were followed in the 1990s were done for peace and stability. But after 1998, when there is just one party effectively ruling the government, it seems that that argument no longer has much weight, because now the peace and stability has been achieved to some extent. I mean, there is no longer a Khmer Rouge, there's no longer a war going on. So how do you think that the priorities of the government have changed now, once peace and stability is there? What are they now focusing on?
Before 1998, human rights violation coming mostly from the political conflict. Even like 2003 too, still have some political conflict between the two coalition party, the two party who made the coalition of the government. But from 2004, after the formation of the government, I see the trend is different. Human rights violation mostly came from the economic conflict, especially on land and natural resource conflict, like the arbitrary arrest, shooting against the protester, freedom of assembly organized by the victim of the land conflict or natural resource conflict, crackdown severely by the government authority. Peaceful march, crackdown also. That is my observation. I think to have the sustainable stability, we should not let this gap to become wider and wider. Now the problem is the distribution of income, distribution of natural resource. You see now more and more for eviction, more and more land conflict, and the land mechanism is not working, is not fair enough to provide a fair this judgment or fair decision to the poor, to the powerless people. And now, yeah, from the government side, they use the argument that now more and more car in the street, traffic jam in the street. But according to the survey of the some international organization like Oxfam, GB, they found in 1993, there were only 2% of landless. But in 2007, 25% are landless. And more than 25, around 35 people per person more, they have less than half hectare per family. That means 60% of the people living in the countryside, and 80% of the population of Cambodia living in the countryside. You see, that means 60 out of the 80% of Cambodian, they need land. That means they are landless, they have not enough land. But in the contrary, our government did provide a lot of land economic concession to the private company. Like last year, 2008, more than 200,000 hectares provided to the private company, instead to provide to the poor people who need land. And the government used the argument that we need to have this kind of development in order to give the job to the people. But for me, I think this model of economic development is not fit to our society. I think we should let the land occupied by the poor people and allow the private company to bring the seed and the technical assistance to the people or to the people. And the private company should just only collect the product and processing for export, and let the people to occupy their land and produce the product by themselves. This way, I think everybody can get the benefit. But if the government just only provide the big land to the private company and evict the people from their land like this, I think only the private company that they get the benefit, but the poor people, they will be the marginalized people, they will get the disadvantage from this economic development process. And for us, we try to sensitize a lot to the government, but the government seems that they think about personal and the group interest more than the people interest, because according to the World Bank recently finding, they found that the development of familial agriculture can reduce the poverty 4 times more than the industrial development or the service development. And now Cambodia is a small country. We still have less land for the people. And why the government accelerate to provide the land to the private company for 99 years? I think that is not correct. This is not right way of the development process. I would like to appeal our government to revise this kind of policy of development in order to reduce the poverty or development our economy, development our society in the right way. They should think mostly to the people, not to the private economy, company alone. Yes, private company, people, and the state should get the benefit from that process altogether, not just on the private company and the government people.
So if there is, there must be a lot of discontentment among the people, a lot of unhappiness about these kinds of issues, like you said. Excuse me. Social stability is a major challenge. Do you think that this is reflected in the elections? Do people vote against the government for these kinds of policies?
You see, our people, they are the farmers. They are the realistic people. They see the immediate benefit. If during the electoral campaign, when the government try to provide something to them, they happy with that. They just only try to renovate the some road for them, but not the solid one. Just only for 6 months, and later on the road become bad again. They be satisfied with that, and they vote for them. They don't see the long term benefit. You see, they just only see the immediate benefit. It hard to sensitize the farmers to see something change in the long run, you see, in the long term, because that is the character of the farmers, not only in Cambodia but all over the world. The reason why to have the political change or political reform, we need to have the middle class. We don't base on the farmers too much. And here in Cambodia, we have 80% of farmers. Saying the middle class still small. If we mobilize them to protect their land rights, okay, they come, because it's immediate benefit. But if you mobilize them about the electoral reform or something that is very abstract, they don't come, because they don't see any benefit, you see. We tried already in 1999, 2000, to have the electoral reform change. A lot of people, they don't aware about that. They didn't come. But for the land grabbing case, they come, and they sometimes dare to sacrifice their life to protect their land rights. That is the character of the farmers that I observe. You cannot expect too much from them if you would like to do some abstract thing, long-term benefit thing. That is the limitation of the farmers for the reform. We should wait until the middle class growing up enough.
Do you think the government has a long-term strategy for Cambodia's development?
I think they try to do something. Yeah, some good government people, they like to do something for the long run too, but the problem they have also, like the low income, low salary, the problem of corruption, the problem of maintaining the power. So that is the challenges for the challenge for them, that they cannot do a lot of things. The reason why the request pressure from civil society organization, donors, community, international investor or international organization, that is very crucial in order to push for this kind of reform. Yeah.
And has that kind of pressure, the international community's pressure, the NGO pressure, has it produced any results?
Yes, I see some progress made. Like I did establish in the first day of my organization one office in one province. The authority, provincial authority there, they use more than 100 police, military, and one tank to close down our office there. And when we established our office in here in Phnom Penh, some police officer, they try to intimidate the chief of the monk, why you allow this group to work in your temple? But now we can work everywhere, not only ad hoc, but also many NGO working, not 100% free, but we can work. We can organize seminar, we can organize workshop, we can organize the training for them. We can invite them to come. That is the progress that we can observe. It's much different from neighbor country like Vietnam or Laos, that no civil society organization, no freedom of press. Yeah, we have some relative freedom of press here. But we still have also some challenges, like many killing of the journalists. Until today, around 10 cases, but no one were arrested because of this killing. The television still controlled by the all the television, 8 channel, still controlled by the ruling party. But we still see some independent radio also. That means some progress, but we still have some challenge, some obstacle. That means we can say that our country is still in the transition period. Yeah.
And what would you say have been the government's major achievements over the last 20 years or 10 years, if you want to look at it in two different periods, 1990s and 2000s, what have been the government's major achievements?
Yeah, economic growth. We can appreciate that. Economic growth with 7 or 8% rate is one of the high rate of growth in the region. But the problem of the economic growth for whom, that is still in question. And like I said to you, that they still allow us to have some space to operate. Decentralization. The people can have some space on that, but still not have the active participation of the grassroots people into that process. what I can say, the law, a lot of law passed. hundred of law passed. Ratify many human rights treaty, human rights covenant. And Rosatut, Cambodia is the first country in the region as a member of state of the ICC. we can say, yeah, we have to recognize some progress like this.
And if you were to think about the biggest drawbacks of the government, you've spoken about the lack of proper human rights implementation,
mm-hmm.
Judicial reform.
Mm.
Is there anything else? Inequality is another thing that you've mentioned.
Deforestation. You see, the forest gone, almost gone. Gem resource also gone. But the corruption is still going on. No serious effort to combat against this kind of social sickness. Morality of the people now is very bad. You see, everyone try to become rich without thinking about the karma of the Buddhists, without thinking about the morality. Everyone in everywhere, they try to find their own way to get money, to become rich without thinking the suffering of the others. Morality is very low now compared to the 1960 or 70 that I had experience with. Even recently the monk, they start to use violence to kill, commit the criminal act. And it will happen, yeah, rarely happened in the past. The gang not happened during my youth time. The drug addicted now is a bad thing. Cambodian society rarely have this kind of experience of the drug addict like today. The mother, the parent, they sold their daughter for sexual exploitation, something like this. That is never happened in the past. That means that the morality is very low. And I didn't see any serious measure taken by the education ministry, information ministry to combat against this kind of low morality, low professional condition like this. Yeah, I met one minister. He said that we just only provide the skill training to our government official, but we didn't provide enough morality to them, professional condition to them. That is the negative aspect that I observe. And you see in the newspaper every day, you see a lot of violence in the families. The children kill their parents. It's never happened before, rarely happened before. And just a small thing, the mom also killed. Never really happened before.
Why do you think this is happening?
Yeah, like I said to you, the morality is very low. And perhaps it's the consequence from the past too, because during the Khmer Rouge time, they put everybody in the hunger situation. Everybody hungry. And now this hungry become the sickness. Even that they have enough to eat, but they still need more, no limit. And no conscience or morality to control that kind of unsatisfactory in their spirit, in their mind. Yeah, this is my, perhaps I could be wrong.
Mm-hmm. And looking into the future, how do you see the role of Ad Hoc, your NGO, in improving the situation? Is it going to be something that you address, the various issues that you have talked about, problems?
We try to continue to sensitize, to give the awareness, not only to the people, but also to our leader about this issue. For example, the sickness, like I said about the galonite, diplomate, and materialist extremist. Now some personality, they prefer to have three titles. Oknya, that means represent the riches of one family or one person. Doctor, represent the highest level of knowledge. And Ayodhama Excellency, represent the highest level of the society, position in the society. And some people, they prefer to use the Ayodhama, Oknya, and Bandit, Doctor, you see? They're the three titles put together, you see? It's very strange for me. In the Western society, if you put your doctor, you put only doctor, not excellency, and Oknya. You see? And here, some people, they put the three titles together. Ayodhama, Oknya, Bandit, doctor, you see, in the same time. That means what? That means it's the sickness in their mind. They suffer, they hungry with this kind of title, you see. The riches, the position in the society, and the knowledge. But if they make the effort to become a doctor, they study hard, okay, no problem. But the problem, they don't study hard, but they would like to get the title of doctor. They don't make their effort to earn the money honestly, but they would like to become millionaire without honest income. They would like to become the excellency without merit. That kind of thing that I concern a lot about the sickness of our society.
Okay. Well, I think that on that note, I think that covers a lot of the questions that I was interested in. If there's anything else you'd like to add.
We try to continue to sensitize, firstly, about this issue, the priority issue, the highest issue of our society, and also we try to provide protection to the victim, the poor, the powerless people, that they can have some hope. Because when they have the problem, sometimes they don't have hope, and we can provide them some small hope to them. That is our raison d'être here, and we continue to do so. That is our role. We know that we also, because we are NGO, we don't have the power. We cannot help them or assist them a lot, but at least we can provide them some small hope like this. That's it.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.